Welcome back to the Tegel Warriors podcast. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to talk about the first international friendlies under our new manager, Jurgen Klinsmann. With me, I've got my friend Albert calling in from Seoul. How you doing, bro?
What's up, Mike? How's it going? March. Can't believe the time's going by quickly. But yeah, I mean, we got a lot to talk about. I feel like a lot has happened since the last time we met each other. So I'm excited.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's jump right into it. I think the first thing that's going to happen today is on March 22nd, Minnesota United have scheduled a press conference to announce the signing of Jung Sang-bin. He's a 20-year-old Korean player. He's on the U22 national team at the moment. Mm-hmm. And they will sign him to a 3-year contract. They will also provide him an option. Either they will trigger it or he will for a 2026 season extension. And then the really cool thing about this signing for the under 22 initiative is that Steve Han reports that they've already agreed that Jung Sang-bin can play in September's Asian Games or even July 2024's Paris Olympics if he's selected, just in case, because he needs to bid to secure his military exemption. This is actually kind of, you know, not necessarily needed because neither tournament is a FIFA mandated mandated release tournament. And both of those tournaments are mid-season for them. So my question just right off the bat is, how do you think this will impact his development?
Yeah, well, firstly, I think when you talk about the fact that they're going to release him for those international tournaments, I really don't think he would have agreed to go to Minnesota if they hadn't put those concessions in. I think that's a given. In terms of what it means for Korean football, I think it's a good thing. He's still young, and this is obviously not going to be a league where he wants to stay long term. So I think as a stepping stone, going over to Minnesota isn't necessarily a bad thing for the kid, and I think he's probably going to get a lot of playing time and probably be the starting center forward for Minnesota. The thing about Jung Sang-bin, I think, is most people don't know is he's actually quite short for a striker. I think he's about 175 centimeters, so he's not a typical target man in the vein of a Cho Gyu-sung, or even if we go back with Korean strikers like An Jung-hwan, you know, he's nowhere near that height. So he's a bit more of a mobile, maybe like a Kun Aguero type player. I'm not saying that's what he's going to be, but I'm just saying in terms of like the body structure, he's just one of those like shorter stature guys. And again, he's still quite young, and I'm not really sure what to make of him. I think it's good that he's already in Europe right now, but this seems like a project move for him. And if it works out, though, it's great, because having a Korean succeed in the MLS will raise the profile for us among American soccer fans, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, overall, I think this is probably going to be a good idea for him. His sort of career trajectory changed in 2021. He had a pretty good breakout season with Suwon Samsung Blue Wings, 6 goals, 2 assists. And after that season, in the winter transfer window, Wolves just decided to do a gamble signing on him, pretty cheap. I think they paid about $1 million for him. They had just signed that past summer, they had signed Hwang Hee-chan. So they're like, maybe we'll double dip. We'll get another Korean player. We'll take a gamble on a youth player. They sent him out to their affiliate feeder club in Switzerland, Grasshopper, Zurich, and he pretty much never played there. And actually, in the reporting of this deal, Zurich's sporting director even gave quotes that he felt that the team should have done better to integrate Jung Sang-bin. He said, Jung was always working very hard, showing a great attitude, but never really got that much playing time, whether it was because of injuries or because of the coach's selection. So I think this is a decent idea to try to just sort of say the first step into Europe didn't work. The first loan move into, you know, Grasshopper Zurich did not work out. This deal provides him guarantees that he gets to play for his military exemption. That's great. And then the other thing about the U22 initiative is we've already seen that it actually can yield success with transfers into Europe again. So John Duran was a player for the Chicago Fire that they signed from, I believe, South America. They signed him for a certain, you know, nominal, like less than $5 million. They signed him when he was even before 18 years old. So he came to Chicago for the 2022 season. He played so well that Aston Villa just signed him for like $15 to $20 million. That's the goal with the U22 initiative in MLS. They want to sign young players, whether it's from South America or now Asia, right? And they will decide to give them a lot of playing time and hopefully transfer them for a hefty profit to the European leagues. If Jung Sang-bin is the first Asian player to benefit from this new rule, that's a good sign. I hope it works out.
Yeah, and I think another thing is just it's important for this to work out because we've had Korean guys go over to the MLS in the past in Hwang In-bum and Kim Moon-hwan, and it didn't really work out for either one of them. So I think that hopefully, you know, with these rules changes and just the new landscape we're seeing, I think this could potentially be the first successful Korean foray into the United States.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's like really good about this deal is Adrian Heath is a very, very experienced coach. Minnesota is a playoff team. I think in the past two signings for MLS of Korean players, the situations didn't quite work out for the player. In Hwang In-bum's case, Vancouver United was not a very great team at the time. They were not a playoff team like Minnesota United is. And then in Kim Moon-hwan's position with LAFC, that was a stacked, star-studded roster, and he doesn't necessarily always fit into it. So when it came time to be 2022, he decided, I'm not sure my playing time is guaranteed here because of the strategy of this club to always attract and sign really good players all the time. So he felt like, if I don't play enough, I might not be selected for the World Cup. And he was absolutely right because he went back to Jeonbuk and made the World Cup team and, you know, played most of the World Cup matches. So overall, Jung Sang-bin's got some work to do. I think finishing-wise, he struggled at the AFC U23 Cup in 2022. So he's got to work on that a little bit. But he's a fast, creative guy. He's a winger. War forward, so he has plenty of development to do, and hopefully Adrian Heath is the guy to, you know, bring it out of him, and is very invested in making sure that this guy plays a lot and integrates really well into the team, because Minnesota will not be that easy of a place to integrate for sure for him. So hopefully it works out, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it gets hard integrating into a new country, let alone a new club, but I, you know, there are a few factors involved, but I think he has a good chance of making it. He's still quite young.
All right, our other big news item is that Jurgen Klinsmann is the new Korean national team manager. He's going to face his first matches on Friday and next Tuesday. Right off the bat, Albert, how do you think that this deal came about? How do you think he was chosen to be this new manager?
Well, I think if we go off what Michael Mueller said, who was in charge of the technical committee at the KFA, was that Jurgen Klinsmann was their number one candidate. And that after he showed interest, there was no need for them to negotiate with other managers. I'm not sure how much I believe that, because from the reports I saw before Klinsmann was hired, we saw other names like Jose Bordalas and Roberto Moreno thrown around. And it was only after apparently the negotiations with them broke down or they rebuffed our interest, that's only when we started hearing Klinsmann's name thrown into the ring. And I'm inclined not to believe Mueller, because if Klinsmann had been the guy, I don't see what took so long in hiring him. You know, we're well into March and he was hired practically, you know, less than a month to go before the friendlies, like the next friendlies were up. So I really think that what happened was Mueller tried to go after some candidates on his initial list, was rebuffed. He circled back and asked guys like Chaduri, who spent a lot of time in Germany, about what they thought. And one of them probably recommended Klinsmann. They called him up, asked him if he was busy. And he said, no, you know what? Maybe I'll come to Seoul. I'm in my mid-50s. Both my kids are out of the house. I'd like to be at another World Cup before I hit 60. To me, that's what it sounds like. That's to me what sounds like happened. And I believe from what my colleague Jason and some other people said, there's whispers in the KFA that the head of the KFA, Chung Myung-gyu, who's basically a Hyundai puppet, is the one who actually picked Klinsmann and overruled the committee. So there are kind of conflicting reports, I guess we could say, about how he was picked, maybe.
I mean, I think you're really right to say you're not sure if you believe Michael Mueller, because the one thing that I think, just seeing Steve Hahn's tweet after watching his press conferences, is that it's somewhat like a snake oil salesman.
Yeah.
A person that at the press conference doesn't really answer the questions being asked of him by reporters, whether it's purposeful or mistranslation. It just, that's a little bit unfortunate. Hopefully over the next 4 years, the KFA can provide better translators to these people, or just, you know, these people, you know, whether it's Mueller or Klinsmann, decide that they're going to really just answer questions and do their best to really stick to the topic at hand. But, you know, when you hear Steve Hahn say like, oh, wow, that was really embarrassing to watch. Like, I can't even believe that this guy is the guy that selected the next national team manager. Yeah. It's not a good sign overall.
No, yeah, that press conference was a mess. I remember rewatching it and I literally learned nothing from the answers. The answers were all just typical PR, robot manufactured. And going off what Steve said, the translator was terrible. He was having a hard time, I think, translating what Klinsmann was, or Mueller was saying in English, and, you know, communicating that with the Korean reporters and their Korean questions. So the entire press conference was a complete mess. And that honestly probably is kind of gives us maybe a glimpse into how this hiring process went down. It was also, sounds like from what I've seen, it was also pretty much a mess as well. Does that mean I think Klinsmann's going to do a bad job? No, I actually, one I think of his more ardent supporters or defenders, you could say, on Twitter when the hire was announced. But, you know, two things can be true at the same time. You know, Klinsmann might do a good job, but I think his hiring process was an absolute mess and probably should have happened way before March, if we're being honest.
All right, Albert, since you are one of his more ardent supporters, can you just tell us the pros of signing Jurgen Klinsmann as the Korean national team manager?
So one big thing I wanted was a manager with national team experience, managing at a World Cup. The other two managers that were mentioned in the shortlist, like Roberto Moreno or Jose Bordalas, have never managed a senior team at a major tournament. That was one big thing that I wanted. And we got a guy who has led a national team deep into a tournament. I know people will say that 2006 was a long time ago, but if you actually read the football book, Das Reboot by Ralf Honigstein, which details kind of how Germany was able to reboot their entire youths and senior system and kind of create like a revolution in the way they play the game, Jurgen Klinsmann played a really key role in that revival. You know, he was the head coach of their 2006 team that made it to the semifinals. And he laid the groundwork for their 2014 World Cup winning team. So that's one big positive. Another big positive is the staff he brings. His goalkeeping coach, Andy Köpke, is a really, really experienced, very good goalie coach. He's worked with the likes of Manuel Neuer and Jens Lehmann, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. He was the Germany's goalie when they won the Euro 96 championships. Just a guy who's going to ooze information and be a great mentor to guys like Kim Sung-yu and Song Bum-gun. Andy Herzog, his other assistant, a great player for Austria back in the day. He was Jurgen's assistant with the U.S. national team. So, you know, there's a lot of good pieces in place here that I like. For me, it's the main question is Jurgen going to make the right tactical decisions when we play? Because, you know, towards the end of his tenure with the USMNT, he started doing some weird things, which ultimately led to that team not qualifying for the 2018 World Cup. So there's a lot of risk here, but there's also a lot of reward just because I think actually his backroom staff on paper is more impressive than what Bento had coming in, even though Bento's staff did a good job. And we all know how much I love Sergio Costa and those guys. So,
yeah, I mean, shout out to Sergio Costa for, you know, doing an interview with us and just sort of giving us an eye into what his time was like with the Korean national team. So I know we got mad love for that guy.
Yes.
So let's just go straight into the cons. And the big con with Jurgen Klinsmann is his habit, his pattern of leaving jobs after disagreements with either players, management, or just leaving behind some sort of feeling that he was not up for the task.
Right.
We're talking about Hertha Berlin, lasted a couple months and then just left basically saying, I can't work with this management.
Yeah.
We're talking about U.S. national team. having a huge row and falling out with Landon Donovan mm-hmm. before that World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking Bayern. Philipp Lahm just coming out and saying that he didn't feel like this guy could coach the team at all. So there's that pattern.
Yeah.
There's that sort of trend that this guy is kind of a maverick. Mm-hmm. This guy shakes things up and leaves behind a lot of scandals and problems.
Yeah.
Can the KFA deal with that? That's one thing that's a little bit of a worry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's most likely what a lot of the fans were sort of latching onto when they were so negative about him.
See, the thing is, the one thing I would counter to that is if he was the top choice for the Hyundai Goons, I think they will want him to succeed so much to the point where they won't even interfere and will probably give him a little more leeway compared to another coach that they bring in. You also have to realize that his name recognition, his brand value as a player, this is probably the one only time in Korean football history we've had a manager that was just as high profile when he was a player compared to when he was a coach. So I think all those things considered, yes, he might shake things up. Yes, he might butt heads with some of the older heads in the KFA. But I think given the Korean obsession with brand name and, you know, name value, I think that alone, his kind of resume might command the respect and he might command enough respect to the point where he might not have to butt heads with some people in the KFA. Again, that could be wishful thinking, but I think that most people in the KFA and the players will respect him just because of who he was as a player, even though, yes, like you said, he definitely has a lot of warts as a coach. But whatever coach we brought in was going to have warts either way. There was no way we were getting someone that was perfect. So, you know, I still think that this could work out and that he might have a good relationship with the people in the KFA.
Yeah, when we talked with Alan at the beginning of the year about the fact that the manager hadn't been chosen yet, we were talking about Korean managers, and Alan had a good quote where he's like, I'm going to come in skeptical, but I'm going to be hopeful that these guys prove me wrong. We have to do that with Jurgen Klinsmann. And I think another thing that like one of our Fighting Stripes team members talked about that was really important was Namu basically saying that searching for a manager in the winter of a national team is never great. Mm-hmm. And that was brought on by the fact that we played a Winter World Cup and contracts were meant to expire after it. So yeah. When you search in the winter, clubs are mid-season, coaches are just the available coaches are still waiting for the summer, waiting to see if a club job opens up for them that they actually want. Yeah. And then, you know, if you're in the summer and the club job just doesn't materialize for you, you're like, ah, maybe I actually will take a national team job, right?
Yeah.
So this is just a different thing. More people would have bit on this job opportunity or been interested in it to interview for it if it was in the summer. But right now, there were less candidates and it ended up just not being that great of a pool. And it seems like after being, you know, rejected or rebuffed by the first candidates that Michael Mora really liked, he was able to just sort of call up his German friend, Jurgen Klinsmann, and get him into the job. And also, it happened that the Korean, you know, KFA guys really liked the brand name and they said, the branding is going to work for us.
Yeah. Because again, at the end of the day, I almost equate the KFA guys, this might be unfair, but to the management style of Tottenham Hotspur. I think, in all honesty, if you got them in a back room and asked them and put a gun to their heads and said, okay, you pick the money or the well-being of the players and winning titles, I think 9 out of 10 times, or most people in that room, probably pick the money. And I think they are going to milk the fact that they've hired such a legendary player as our manager to no end. The PR blitz is going to be incredible, I think even more so than what we saw with Paulo Bento, because, you know, Paulo Bento was a great manager, but he wasn't exactly a rah-rah media, like, in the spotlight type, which Jurgen Klinsmann kind of is. You know, he's been a pundit on TV before. And speaking of money, I know we're going to discuss this later about the friendlies, but I got something to say about the way the KFA has been handling their ticketing for these upcoming matches.
All right, before we get to that, let's just sort of talk about a big picture question for Jurgen Klinsmann's 4 years in charge of the national team leading us to the 2026 World Cup in the US. and also including a 2024 Asian Cup. We now finally see, you know, the KFA is pretty much confirming it for us that the Asian Cup will occur in January 2024 in Qatar.
Yeah.
So their branding for their, you know, again, Qatar PR campaign on Instagram says 2024 January. So that's what they know. So it's pretty much confirmed. It hasn't been, you know, announced by the AFC, but that's what they're saying. It's January 2024. So that's what they're building towards. What do you think are his biggest tasks over these next 4 years?
Well, his first task is he has to go deep in the Asian Cup. And I actually said this in our group chat. If I think Korea gets eliminated early in the Asian Cup, I think he's gone, actually. That first tournament is going to be a huge barometer of what's going to happen. Because I think, honestly, like I've said before, most of the fan reaction to his hiring has been negative. So he's already kind of starting from an antagonistic point, like antagonistic, starting point with the fans and also the media. You know, in his press conference, he's had, you know, reporters already question him about whether he has the tactical acumen for the job. So I think the expectation, even for me, though, despite the fact that I like Jurgen, is that he has to win the Asian Cup or at least make it to the final. That's the bare minimum. The worst, I think, will take a semifinal. And then in terms of the 2026 World Cup, I think the main goal here is very similar to kind of what the USMNT is building for. And I think for us, the standard now is to win at least one knockout stage game at the next World Cup with the generation of players that we have coming up. So I want to see, yes, progress in the knockout rounds, and I want to see an Asian Cup trophy, but more importantly, I also want to see him develop this new crop of young players coming in. And one thing I didn't mention is kind of push out some of these older fringe players that we used in Qatar at the World Cup, and I want to see him start integrating some of the new guys, not in this upcoming friendly, but in the next few friendlies ahead and also at the Asian Cup, and start to see new blood, you know, the youth players that we've seen in recent years start to kind of solidify their place in the national team. I think maybe that might be the most important thing besides the tournament results, because we have to think long-term as a smaller country.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point to talk about making sure to bridge the gap in generations and make sure not to rely upon, you know, the older fringe players that were played a lot in Qatar. We're not going to name names. I don't think that really makes anything better. Mm-hmm. But I think a really good stat to sort of talk about is Zach Lowy just tweeted this out. Korea's average age in the starting lineup in world football was 29.01 years.
Yeah.
And that was on the higher end towards for international football. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that that age average goes down. And then the other thing to think about, right, is that the players are only going to be getting older. So we can't have, like, if we're relying on the same core squad over the next couple of years, mm-hmm. we could start seeing our average age hit 30 or 31. Mm-hmm. That's not what we want to do, because the highest age in the world football was Kuwait at 29.76. Like, we don't want to be the, like, using the oldest squad in world football. That's really not what we want to be doing. And there are going to be some promising players in the U22, U24 national team that play positions of need for the Korean national team. That's just not debatable. Like, there are positions of need that have young players coming through that we should hope to see them play for the senior national mm-hmm. team. We should hope to see them play well mm-hmm. in the next 2 years, either in, you know, China for the Asian Games or in Paris for the Olympics. Mm-hmm. Hopefully.
Yeah, and to that point, Mike, I want to caution people listening right now who think that the current squad that we called up for these two friendlies, do not get attached to some of these names, because I guarantee you a good number of these guys that were called up will probably never get called up again, or will slowly start to be phased out of the national team in a few months' time. I'm not saying like half the squad is going to be gone or like even 40%, but I'm saying a good 10 to maybe 25% of these guys probably will not be in the long-term plans of Jurgen Klinsmann. And the only reason they were all called up is because Jurgen was hired so late into this process, and he just relied on what he had with Bento's old World Cup squad just as a kind of an introduction, I guess we could say. And then you'll see what he has. He'll get more time in Korea, and then that's when he'll start picking and choosing the guys he likes and solidifying his style. So don't get attached to the roster that he called up right now. This is just it's a mirage right now.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Jurgen basically arrived in Korea and then in a couple days selected a squad. That's mm-hmm. not enough time for him to actually know what's going on with the players in his player pool. He will have 3 more months before he plays more matches. Mm-hmm. That means he can go to a lot of K-League matches before June. Mm-hmm. He can also send his European-based staff to a lot more matches around Europe of Korean players. And he should be able to see some different players and select some different players. So don't get attached to this squad just being, you know, the 2022 World Cup squad fully going through for this next 4 years. That's probably not going to happen. He is going to look at, you know, different players, and he should select different players overall.
Yeah.
The other big task, I think, for him is Jurgen Klinsmann needs to figure out how is he going to manage an aging Son Heung-min. Mm-hmm. We have seen that this year. Whether it's Antonio Conte's tactics or age coming into play with Son Heung-min, the way he plays is starting to decline. And I think Jurgen Klinsmann is going to figure out how is he going to get the most out of this player, because Son Heung-min is pretty clear that he would like to still go to the 2026 World Cup and still be a very, very large starting part of this team for the next 4 years.
Yeah. And here's the thing, though, and we discussed this before in our chat, is that is it age? Maybe, but is also Antonio Conte playing such a negative brand of football where you see his heat map and he's playing as almost a central defensive midfielder with Perisic kind of occupying the spaces he likes? Or is it the fact that he's declining? I think we'll get a better answer of that this next season with Tottenham and their new manager. But you're right. Son Heung-min is going to be, I think, around 34, 33 when the 2026 World Cup kicks off in the United States. It will definitely be his last World Cup, but we might even be asking the question, I think he'll make the squad, but will he even be a starting player, or will he be a starting player that only is able to give us, you know, 50 to 60 minutes and then subbed off, you know, sometime in the second half? That's something he has to juggle. But I will remind people about Jurgen Klinsmann is that when he was the manager for Germany and the USMNT, he wasn't afraid to make controversial decisions and leave out older players if he felt like they didn't deserve to be in the team. Landon Donovan comes to mind. I think, honestly, at that time, Landon probably did deserve to be in that USMNT team. Did he deserve to start every match? I'm not sure. But Jurgen made the hard decision not to even bring him on the plane. I'm not going to say he's going to do that with Sonny. I'm just saying that you can never put it past Jurgen because he's not afraid to rattle people. And he also did that in the 2006 World Cup with the Germany goalie. Oliver Kahn was the undisputed number one for years until Klinsmann came in and said, no, you're going to still get your lion's share of games, but Jens Lehmann is also going to play a bit and he's going to get a chance. And lo and behold, Jens took the number one job for the 2006 World Cup. People thought Jurgen was crazy. Turned out to be the right move. So with guys like Jurgen, you know, Sony's going to get his chance, but if he doesn't produce consistently anymore for the next few years, then absolutely, his place in the national team could be in jeopardy.
Yeah, and I think there would be nothing wrong with that. I think as he gets into his 30s, he should start to become, you know, a 60-minute player or a come on at the 60th minute to influence the second half type of mm-hmm. player. So that should be managed. And I think that's a really good point that I didn't really understand about Jurgen, that he's going to make these controversial decisions with player selection. So, I mean... Let's just sort of talk about comparing him to Bento, right? Mm-hmm. A controversial decision that hopefully maybe if we compare and contrast Paolo Bento and Jurgen Klinsmann, we can think about Hwang Ijo. Mm-hmm. Would Jurgen Klinsmann have stuck with Hwang Ijo for as long as Paolo Bento did? Maybe not. Hopefully not. That's, you know, a sort of compare and contrast that we can sort of make, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could. And the funny thing is, Klinsmann still called up Hwang Ijo to this recent team. I think the three omissions that he had was Yoon Jong-gyu, Hong Chul, and I'm spacing the other one. There's one guy that was in that World Cup team that didn't make it this time around. Bento had a problem with that, and I really think that Klinsmann, for all his faults, won't be that type of guy. But the problem is, at the same time, you know, when he didn't take Landon Donovan, I remember he took Brad Davis instead, who was a horrible player. He took guys like Chris Wondolowski. So even if he does end up, you know, shuffling things around and maybe dropping older players that don't deserve to play, there's also no guarantee that he's going to nominate the right guy. So it's kind of a mixed bag with Jurgen too when it comes to that. But again, I think unlike Paolo Bento, he will give more chances to guys who wouldn't have gotten looks in the past, because I think Paolo had a certain group of players that he really liked that he was never going to deviate from. I don't think Jurgen is as stubborn in his selection method. So that could be one change we're going to see.
Yeah, we just have to hope that not being flexible and not being just sort of stuck with a specific group of core players mm-hmm. works out in the long run. Mm-hmm. Because you're absolutely right. Like, especially during his time with the U.S. men's national team, he was very flexible and tried out different groups of players all of the time, I think. Mm-hmm. I think to the point where it kind of just, over the time that he was the manager, it ruined their chemistry.
It did.
Yeah. So that's the extreme negative side. But
yeah,
the positive side is that if you're constantly changing your players, you can find players that are in form more often. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that works out. Let's talk about these two matches and who we're playing next, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I think like the one thing I kind of wanted to talk about is that we're playing Colombia and Uruguay. And doesn't it feel like we kind of tend to be playing the same teams over and over now?
I think so. And I think that maybe those teams have gotten a taste of that KFA money, you know, nice little vacation to Asia in the spring and then get some nice, you know, money in the bank. We played Colombia, I think last time was in 2018 or 2019. That game, if people don't remember, was quite ugly, had a few, incidents like, well, racism, basically, Colombian players racially abusing, the South Korean players. But, I think we beat them 2-1, if I remember correctly. And I just think since the European teams are all going to want to stay in Europe for these, you know, March friendlies, we had also no choice but to call a South American team because we're not going to play an Asian team. So it's either them or someone in North America. And I think that we're limited by our geography. So yeah, we do play a lot of the same teams, but you know, the quality of opponents could be worse. You know, I know Colombia didn't qualify for the World Cup, but they're always a scrappy little team. And Uruguay still has some decent players. So I'm not supremely disappointed in the friendly choices. It could have been a little better, but we're not exactly spoiled for choice.
I think the other thing that's like kind of ruining it is I think that Nations League qualifiers or matches are being played this March. So
yeah. Well, the thing I hate about the Nations League is that it's prevented any possibility for any of these European teams to visit Korea during like the competitive season. Now the only time they could actually visit is when, you know, they're like everything, like their club seasons have all finished and everything, because the Nations League has basically incentivized all these European teams to never leave Europe. So it's just a money grab by UEFA, and I wish they would get rid of it, but it looks like it's not going anyway anytime soon. So
So like essentially the Nations League is taking up March, June, and I think like the September, October, November, November windows, right?
Yeah.
So really the only time that we get to play European teams in friendlies now is like January, which is not a time when FIFA mandates clubs to release their players. So we don't even get the, you know, full strength European sides when we play them at that January camp, right? It just doesn't really work out. I think honestly, at the end of the day, actually, this will just make it even more important for Korean players to end up, you know, transferring to Europe and playing there full time, because that will be how they get their competitive reps against European and South American and African players in very competitive matches, right? And I think the other thing that this will probably make more important is that K-League teams qualify and do well in the, you know, expanded Club World Cup, because that will be another opportunity to play European and South American sides in very competitive matches. But yeah, the opportunity for Korean players at the national team level to get competitive reps against the best teams in the world is dwindling with the creation of Nations League. So it just seems like our options right now are South American teams and African teams and maybe CONCACAF teams outside of CONCACAF Nations League. Like, it's it's not the best.
Yeah, I mean, even those CONCACAF teams hardly ever visit Asia. I really think the only reason the USMNT played Japan was because they were going to Qatar and they needed to play a decent opponent before the World Cup as a warm-up. So even CONCACAF, I think, has corporatized their entire football structure to the point where they only want to stay within that continent. So I think maybe I've heard whispers, I don't know if it was the Gold Cup or a Copa America where they would invite Asian teams, but shoving that aside, like you said, yeah, there's just not much space in the calendar anymore with so many games on tap, and it's disappointing. So,
yeah, I mean, now that we know that the FIFA World Cup has more games and there's more Nations League games, like, it's just there are too many games being played in football, in world football. There's too much money being chased. And
well,
I think the gap's going to widen too, right?
Yeah, and I think honestly, UEFA and FIFA are turning, they want to turn international football into club football, because the Nations League is a meaningless trophy, almost as meaningless as the Carabao Cup, right? Or maybe like the FA Cup. I know the FA Cup isn't meaningless, but if you ask most EPL fans, would they rather win the Prem or the FA Cup? I think everyone would pick the Prem. So again, it's just another quote-unquote trophy that they use to sell more TV money under the guise of a competitive game. You know, it's not a friendly, quote-unquote. So that's what they're trying to do. And, you know, it seems like it's infecting every single continent across the world.
All right, Albert, we're talking about money. So it's time. Tell us your thoughts about the KFA's ticketing system and just overall woes for these sets of friendlies. What's going on, man?
Well, that was a great transition, by the way. That was great, Mike. All right. So as most people know in this podcast, I've regularly attended like all the friendly matches for the Korean national team, leading, you know, going back to last year. The KFA has its own site called Play KFA, where you essentially make an account and you have to wait on standby for a certain time and a certain day. And that's when the tickets open, and that's when you enter the website and you select your seats and you pay for them. The problem is, even going back to last year, the site was a complete mess and a complete joke. For example, you would log on during the specified time and you would already have like tens of thousands of people in the queue waiting, and you would try to select a ticket and your computer would either crash or you would get an error message sending you all the way back to the end of the line, where you would proceed to go crazy and just rage quit and throw your computer. So it essentially led to, I think, most people having to buy their tickets for the games via third parties, right? AKA scalpers, secondhand sites, where you have to essentially pay, obviously, you know, a lot more money. Last year wasn't as bad. Last year, I think the going rate for a decent seat was around 30,000 Korean won, original retail price. And then I go through a third party scalper and I would pay around 50,000 won. So the scalper makes about a 20,000 won profit. Now, I think with the post-World Cup bump, I'm seeing those same tickets going on sale for 100,000 won. They're essentially making over three times the original face value, and the KFA is just sitting there doing nothing about it, and it infuriates me. And I'm also honestly curious if the stadium is going to be full for next week's matches, because I'm not sure all those scalpers are going to be able to sell their tickets. They might be able to, but I'm not sure. I know many people who are able to just throw hundreds of dollars away for one football match that's essentially a friendly, and it's really sad, and the KFA has done nothing about it, and they're just sitting there collecting their money, and it's really turned me off and soured me, honestly, away not from rooting for the national team, but just for kind of the way I think about the way they handle their business, in a sense. And I really think this is a problem that would be fixed if we weren't controlled by a chaebol. If we were under maybe maybe some kind of a different system, it would be better. Unfortunately, this is the way it is, and it's sad, man. It's just pricing out, you know, the average working Joe from watching their heroes on the field, and it kind of shows you the state of football today.
Okay, I have a quick question. Actually, just random sidetrack. What would you call How would you translate average Joe into Korean? Just real quick. Just
okay, give it a shot. So again, about the prices that I mentioned, right? 50,000 Korean won, for those who don't know, translates to around 45 US dollars, okay? Now you would say, oh my God, Albert, you paid only 45 US bucks for a nice seat at an international friendly. Well, you have to understand, the wages in Korea are a lot lower than what you get in the United States. No, it's not a third world country. Yes, it's a first world country with lots of good stuff, but still the wages are not as high. Average Korean salary man makes, I think, around less than 3,000 US dollars or close to that per month. That's less than 40K a year. And given the increasing cost of living here, the insane real estate prices, the insane price to go out and eat, it's just not economically viable for an average Joe Korean office worker making less than 40K a year to drop hundreds of dollars on a freaking friendly, man, let alone a competitive game. It's a friendly. So that's why I was raging so hard on social media, because it's criminal, these prices. It's just the average Korean worker probably makes around, I think, maybe 200,000 won a day at their day job. My math could be off, but imagine basically paying half your day's salary for one ticket. Most folks can't afford that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think the other thing to sort of think about is that the KFA has already put out on social media, whether it's on Twitter or on Instagram, they have put out the self-congratulatory sold out on both matches.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah, I mean, let's hope you guys are right, because if your stadium doesn't look full, you guys are the ones that are going to look bad, because you already put out your self-congratulatory sold out tweets. Like, doesn't matter if you're, I don't think that sold out matters if all the people that are buying are ended up being scalpers that just want to profit off this thing. It's not going to work. So maybe sort of think about that a little bit more before saying that your matches are going to have full stadiums.
Yeah.
Let's just think about it that way.
The only way they'll ever change is if, like you said, Mike, half the stadium is empty for a game in the Capitol. That would be really, really embarrassing for them. And I think public shame is the only way you usually convince, you know, big corporate overlords to implement real change. I don't think the stadium will be half empty for the game next week. But again, I'm not sure how this system is going to work, because these prices are insane compared to last year's.
All right, let's talk about the football, okay? Mm-hmm. On Friday in Ulsan, Korea will take on Colombia. And then next Tuesday in Seoul at the Seoul World Cup Stadium, they will take on Uruguay in a rematch of the 2002 World Cup group stage. Both matches will be kicking off local time, 8 p.m. That means in North America about 6 a.m., 7 a.m., depending on where you live, or maybe even 4 a.m. if you're Paul Jung and you live in California. Shout out PJ.
No, he lives in Vegas. Don't get that wrong.
Oh my! I always think about that. I always think about that.
He's from California, but he lives in Vegas.
You're absolutely right, yes. My man.
Shout out Paul.
But yes, PJ, it's going to be a rough morning for you, but we know you're going to wake up early for it. We know you are.
He has three kids, or two or three kids. He's used to waking up early. So,
all right. So tell me, Albert, just name a couple players that you'd like to see earn starting minutes. Hopefully ours are different, but yeah, let's talk about that.
You know, I ragged on him in the friendlies last year, but surprise shout, I'd like to see Kim Tae-hwan get some minutes at right back. He's a pretty valuable player for Ulsan Hyundai. He's a little older, but I've heard people rave about, you know, his ability going forward, and I didn't see much of that when he played against Egypt last year. And I'd like to see what he has compared to like guys like Kim Moon-han. You know, Moon-han did well for himself at the World Cup, but I would still like to see another option at that position. You know, the obvious golden boy that I've talked about all the time, Lee Kang-in. I think he will play, actually. I think Klinsmann likes him and his style of play, so I'm not worried about that. If there's another player that I had to pick to get some minutes, you know, I would like to see Song Bom-gun get a game in net. From what people have been telling me, it's not my opinion, this kid is the future number one goalie of the national team. So I think that it would be nice if maybe we let Kim Seung-gyu get the first game just on senior rights against Colombia. And then maybe, you know, give the kid a chance in the Seoul World Cup Stadium against Uruguay and see what he has, and see if maybe we can start grooming him in the next 3 years to be our guy in 2026. So those are the two guys I would like to see get some more minutes. But if I had to pick one, it'd definitely be Song Bong-gun, because it's time for him to show what he has. Now he's in Japan making big money. Kid, show us what you got. Can you dethrone Kim Seung-yu, who's been firmly entrenched as the number one for, what, like going on 5 years now almost?
I like that you picked those players, and they are definitely different than from the ones that I'm going to talk about. Mm-hmm. I think one guy I would really love to see get a start or even start both matches is Oh Hyun-kyu, the man that just transferred to Celtic FC. I think overall the transition to Scottish football has gone pretty well for him. He's already scored 3 goals. This past weekend, he showed his tenacity to beat out a defender and just jump past the dude for a header. So that's really great to see him just in league play and in cup matches being able to score goals. So I'd love to see him start one of the matches. Mm-hmm. I would also like to see Ikije start a match as well. He's the left back that's replacing Hongchar.
Yes.
And a lot of K-League watchers in the past couple of years, one of their big criticisms of Paolo Bento was why Paolo Bento was always stuck to Kim Jin-su and Hongchar as his left back options, when Ikije, even though Suwon Samsung over the past couple of years have kind of struggled in their form, people always say that Ikije was one of their best players and deserved a chance to represent the national team and show what he could do. So mm-hmm. I would love to see him get a start as well in one of these matches. And then the third player, I think, I want to see Paek Seung-ho maybe get a start and change my mind. Over the past couple years with Bento, I wasn't sure about him, but maybe a new manager in Jurgen Klinsmann can find the best out of him. So yeah, those are three players I'd like to see earn some starting minutes.
I like the Oh Hyun-kyu shout. And by the way, shout out to all you Cho Kyu-sung fangirls and fanboys. Cho Kyu-sung has not started well at all this season for Chungbuk Hyundai Motors. He has 1 goal that came from a penalty and 0 from open play. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if Oh Hyun-kyu continues to play the way he is, he will be the main striker for South Korea at the 2026 World Cup and not Cho Kyu-sung. I think that Oh probably has a bit of a higher ceiling than Cho. And I think if he continues on his current run of form and he maintains that, he could be like the next great Korean attacking player overtaking Cho Kyu-sung. Because, you know, Cho had that little World Cup bump with the 2-goal performance against Ghana and the fact that he was so handsome. But I think from a long-term footballing perspective, you know, Oh could be, you know, the special one that we have. I'm not saying he's going to be the next one, but I really think, like you said, if he keeps playing the way he does, he'll solidify himself as the first choice number 9.
So the last thing I kind of wanted to talk about is who's in good club form and who can really help a Jurgen Klinsmann out in terms of benefiting from that club form. Mm-hmm. So for me, let me just talk about a couple players that are in really good form. They might be different from the ones I just mentioned, but Oh Hyun-kyu at Celtic is in really good form. Lee Gang-in is in very good form with Mallorca right now. Mm-hmm. EJ Sung is also in really good form over at Mainz.
Yeah.
And I think another player that we got to mention in terms of good club form is Jo Yu-min for Daejeon Hana Citizen.
Mm-hmm.
Daejeon has had a really, really, really strong start to their first season back mm-hmm. in the K-League 1. So that's another player. Like, Jo Yu-min is a rock solid center back for them, always either in center back or central defensive mid. So I think those are 4 players that are in really good club form that mm-hmm. Jurgen Klinsmann should be looking to benefit from. Do you have any other names to add to that, Albert?
I like that shout. I think the Cho Yu-min shout is interesting. I've always thought he was a bit of a physical specimen, but he never really got, I think, as much game time as he should have under Paolo Bento. So I think I would like to see him actually start as one of the starting center backs against maybe Colombia, because they're a bit of a weaker team. But besides that, in terms of club form, you know, Hong Hee-jo has not played well at all for FC Seoul. He hit the bar in his last game, but he still hasn't scored. Cho Kyu-sung, again, like I said, not playing well. A lot of this team actually has not been playing well. Song Min-kyu has not been great for Chungbuk this season. Chung Woo-young is struggling for minutes at Freiburg. I think honestly, Mike, you nailed most of the guys in form that should be playing right now. Well, I can't forget to mention Kim Min-jae, but he's obviously going to start. So, yeah, I can't really think of another guy who's been playing well that should absolutely see minutes, because most of this team right now is not playing that well. So,
All right, let me just give you a 4-3-3 type of lineup with players that I think make the most sense in terms of their club form to start. So let's sort of go through it. And goalkeeper across the two matches, let's try to see Kim Sung-gyu and Song Bum-kun. At the back, we're going to want to see Jo Yu-min, Yi Ki-jae, Kim Moon-hwan, Kim Min-jae, and Kim Jin-soo. I think those are the defenders we're going to want to see. Albert wants to see Kim Tae-hwan as well.
Yeah.
In midfield, it's looking like we're going to probably want to see Baek Seung-ho, Son Heung-min, Lee Kang-in, Lee Jae-sung, and Hwang In-bum, right?
Yeah.
Those are the on-form guys in midfield.
Yep.
And then when we're talking about the forwards that have been picked, Oh Hyun-gyu is the big form guy that we want to see start at least one of these matches, right?
Yeah, Oh Hyun-gyu should absolutely start one match, and I give Cho a run out. Hwang Hee-jo should be stapled to the bench for all two games.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier, right? In terms of one of the older players that needs to be phased out, for me, the top of my list is is Hwang Hee-jo. He just needs to be phased out over these next 4 years. Hopefully, I think even before Asian Cup, he should be phased out. Unless he has an incredible 2023 K-League season or somehow miraculously starts playing Premier League football for Nottingham Forest in the 2023-2024 season, I don't really think that there's a future where he makes a case for himself continuing to be in his 30s a selection as one of our number nines. That's just my thoughts on it. I think whether it's Oh Hyun-gyu, whether it's Jung Sang-bin, whether it's Cho Kyu-sung, whether it's another name that's at the U24 level, there should be some way to replace him in the squad at the senior level. So that's one thing, but hopefully in these matches we don't need to see him play because he still hasn't gotten off the market FC Seoul. He's still struggling, so
I think his call-up by Jurgen was more of a courtesy thing. Like, you bag so many goals for Paulo that I'll just, you know, I'll keep the respect and call you up just for these two games. Yeah.
Yeah, but in June, if we're still sitting on zero K-League goals, please no.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Yeah, I'm not gonna... Should we do predictions, I guess, for these two games if you want?
Yeah, let's do it. What do you think, Albert?
All right, let's see. Against Colombia, because they're a pretty weak team and the stadium in Ulsan should be rocking. I'll go with a clean 2-0 victory. Not too exciting. I think we'll bag an early goal and probably score a late one. And then 2-0 in Ulsan. And up in Seoul against Uruguay, I think it'll be a little more of a messy match. I'm going 2-2 draw up in Seoul.
I actually like that Uruguay projection because I think both teams will kind of want to score goals this time because they were not able to do that at the World Cup.
Absolutely.
I think Uruguay was probably pretty pissed that they actually weren't able to break us down in that World Cup match.
Yeah.
So hopefully they'll try to show something different. I think their strategy in that match was a little bit just they didn't try to attack until too late. I think they just sort of was like hoping for the first 45 minutes just, I guess, lull us into making a mistake that they could capitalize on instead of actually trying to attack us. And then they realized at 70, 80 minutes, like, oh, we actually have to start really attacking this team. So they'll try a different strategy. And I think a 2-2 draw makes a lot of sense. I like that one a lot. I think both teams will want to score and both teams should score in Seoul for this for the fans. What if Colombia is a trap game? And what if we actually lose that one? That's a possibility. But I'm also going to say like maybe like a 2-1 win there. Yeah. I think that Colombia will, you know, whether it was Costa Rica last year, still, even if these teams seem weak, they can score on us. So
yeah,
that's my prediction.
Yeah, I think that we will bag at least two goals in one of the games. But yeah, I don't even care if we see defensive structure. I just want to see for the short term, I just want to see Son Heung-min get some confidence and maybe bag a goal or two just because his club form at Tottenham has been so rotten. So hopefully he has little, you know, national team bounce and then goes back to London a bit more energized. That's that and the end. Maybe some other guys like we mentioned get some game time. That's my only expectation for this camp because, like I said, this is not what the long-term vision of the KFA or of the national team is going to look like in the next 3.5 years.
Yeah. In terms of goal scorers, I'd love to see Son Heung-min score a goal just to get some confidence for himself. I think it would be really cool if Oh Hyun-gyu scores a goal and just introduces the fans to his like new blonde highlights that he's he's loving getting in Scotland. Don't know where the salon that he did that was at, but it's looking good for him. So hopefully his confidence from his time in Scotland is transferred back into Korea. And then sort of last thought that I want to just tell you, I'm looking at the Instagram post of the squad, and the top pinned Instagram comment is ticketing service, fix it, please.
Oh my Lord. See, like, if I'm pissed, how bad do you think the Koreans are? Like, it's pretty bad. And again, I'm telling you right now, they're probably going to release a statement saying, oh, we're sorry. We'll do better next time. And please, we're very, you know, we have a lot of issues and we're not perfect. And they'll come back and do the same thing again. So I'll probably just watch the game at a bar and save some money. It'll be fine. But yeah, that whole thing's a mess. And God, I don't know what else to say. Like, it's a disgrace. It really is.
Yeah. In the original Korean, just straight to the point, ticketing 서버 관리 좀 잘해줘요.
Oh, yeah.
Just straight to the point.
Yeah.
Do better with your ticketing server. Man, like, that sort of sums it up, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. I do wonder what guys like, other guys like Steve, think about this whole system. He's probably used to it by now, but it was the same way when people were trying to get tickets for the Brazil game last year. That was hell. That was virtually impossible, so I mean, it looks like it's more the same now. It could get better, I think, after a few months later, because this may be like a post-World Cup bump. But again, the system is still crap. So KFA, if you're listening to this, you don't have to listen to us for anything else. Just fix the damn tickets, please, so people could actually watch the games. You know, actual fans, that'd be great.
I mean, ticketing systems overall in the US as well are struggling, but KFA, you've got plenty of tech companies with plenty of server management abilities. Just hire the right one and fix this, okay? Because
yes.
Queues where multiple people are vying for the same tickets, overloading your server, that's just embarrassing. Just don't let that happen, okay? No more.
Yep.
All right, guys, I think we have got through a lot of really good topics. We talked a lot about a lot of really good things when we're talking about the national team. For now, I think the best thing to do is just enjoy these next coming matches, right, Albert?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be a good welcome respite. It's been a while since we had national team games. And I think no matter what happens, we should enjoy it and just enjoy the fact that we have a new manager, you know, support him and the new staff and just see this as a new beginning. You know, each cycle is a new beginning. We forget what happened in the past and we move forward. And the good news is we still have a lot of exciting young players and a good energy surrounding the team, despite the ticketing issues. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to watch the game on Friday against Colombia at home with my grandma and just chill. And then on Tuesday, I'll go to a local pub and down some beers. And, you know, just for 90 minutes, we get to forget about all our problems and just enjoy the game. And that's what makes it so important to us. And hopefully we get a good result and we'll come back and see you guys next time on the pod.
Mm-hmm. On the next episode of the podcast in the next couple of weeks, we will be breaking down what we saw tactically, how it sort of differed from the style of play that Paulo Bento was bringing to the national team. We'll break down these victories or draws or losses. Hoping for victories, though, guys. Hoping for victories. But for now, thank you so much, guys, for listening. Enjoy the next two friendlies against Colombia and Uruguay. And we'll see you guys next time, okay? Peace and blessings, y'all.